Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And it's such a pleasure to have you with me today. This is such a great opportunity for all of us to have conversations that really inspire, uplift, transform. And as always, I have a very, very special guest that will be sharing some absolutely inspiring information with us today. Before we go there, I always like to say hi to anybody who may be listening to the very first time. Hope you'll be coming back over and over again. And if you want to get the archives of the show so they just arrive either to your inbox, which is when you opt into my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, drcherylselman.com, or if you would prefer, like me over on my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. I post all of the shows. I have a second show on Progressive Radio Network called The Love Code every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. That gets posted as well on my Facebook page, or it gets sent out through the website. So if you want to just opt into that website, it just will arrive to your inbox every week. Therefore, you don't have to miss the show, and you don't want to, because during these times, you really want to have information that not only opens your eyes, but opens your heart. So that's what these shows are all about. And I want to just jump into our conversation today because it's a really important conversation. I have as my guest Dr. Janine Sagert, and she is talking about, we are exploring the healing power of plant medicine for post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and a whole lot more, a really important topic. Let me just tell you a little bit about Janine. She has dedicated her life to integrating spiritual understanding into daily life and helping others to do so. Her education, professional work, and her personal dedication all center around the premise that work life and spiritual life are not two separate worlds. Indeed, they come from the same source. Her life is a testimony to this truth. She is dedicated to exploring psychological and spiritual resilience across cultures and using that wisdom to help others navigate their work and life circumstances with more efficiency, health, creativity, and joy. She has also served as content producer for a documentary film called From Shock to Awe. This feature-length documentary tells the stories of combat veterans and their families who are healing post-traumatic stress disorder with the aid of cannabis, ayahuasca, and MDMA. And it's an amazing documentary, and I just had to have Janine on the show today. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Janine Sagert to the show. Hello, Janine. Welcome.
Hi. Hi. Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
You know, I'm just so happy we've finally been able to have this conversation because we've been trying to get this happening for a while, and you've been traveling to Australia, and I've just been traveling where I'm traveling, so I'm thrilled we finally are on the same continent and can make this happen. You know,
in the same time zone, but almost.
No, not quite in the same time zone. I know you've just come back from Australia, so you're still collecting your molecules. So,
yes.
But I'm glad you're here with us. You know, I had the pleasure of meeting you. When was that? In August when I came back from Australia, and we were able to find a time to get together in the 24 hours that I had in Northern California. So it was such a pleasure to meet you. I was so glad we were able to coordinate a time and to learn so much about you, because you're such an interesting person, Janine, what you're doing in your life. And I think maybe a good place for us to start in our conversation is to share a little bit about who you are and your journey that eventually led you to some very interesting places, but most recently led you to be the one of the producers for this amazing new documentary, inspiring new documentary called From Shock to Awe. So why don't you just jump in and share a little bit about your own personal journey?
Sure. I, like many of us, had an early inclination towards spirituality. And so it has played out in my life, starting quite early when I went to India in 1969 as an early traveler there. And also, shortly thereafter, I had an experience with a psychedelic, which had a profound impact on my consciousness. And since then, my work life, my spiritual life, my personal life have all been come out of that seed, out of that deep, deep experience that occurred, including my most recent in producing this film. In between, I've gotten a doctorate at UC Berkeley in culture and mental health with a subspecialty in altered states of consciousness, have worked as a consultant, executive coach, et cetera. Worked at Harvard in psychiatric epidemiology. It's a long life, so there's a lot to say. But the basic trend is that spirituality has infused itself in everything I do, bringing it across, translating it so others can understand it and use it and integrate it into their life. And, of course, I'm the number one subject, having to do that for myself.
Sorry about that. You know, I just want to say that when you're on when you have an awakening, a spiritual awakening, and obviously it was very early in this life's journey for you, everything changes, right? Everything is,
yes,
is transformed, and you really begin this journey that is the driving, it's a focus, it's the lens through which you see and do everything after you have an awakening type of experience.
Exactly. That's what informs everything, because it is so profound for all of us who have had that you go, this is real, this is the truth, this is the bigger reality, if you will. And it's my pleasure and duty to bring that to as many people as possible in terms of, you know, that bigger perspective, the fact that we're all unified, the fact that everything we need dwells within us. You know, all the phrases that we've heard over all those years definitely come to life. And just like you, how can we not dedicate our lives to that?
Right. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you started off with a really interesting major. I mean, you must have forged your own, you know, academic career, because that was really unusual to kind of have this subtitle or, you know, a psychedelic,
yes,
and altered states in a PhD program.
Yes. Well, in fact, it was so unusual. UC Berkeley allows 5 students a year to create their own program. So if you can prove that it's not in any one department, but the resources are there to do doctorate-level work, they allow a handful of students to do that. Hence my degree, which was in clinical psychology and anthropology, culture and mental health, looking across various cultures, how they influence individuals, both their mental health, spiritual health, and vice versa, how individuals interpret their culture. So it was from that, and quite honestly, it all came out of my experience with LSD in 1970. Because I had had that experience, I was looking for ways in my education to learn more about it and learn how to translate it better in rational terms to people who might not have encountered it. So it definitely came out of that. These days, of course, there are programs like the California Institute of Integral Studies that have East-West psychology. They talk about altered states overtly, but back in the day, it wasn't usual. And even the word consciousness was kind of, you know, eyebrows raised when you talked about that in academic circles.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right, though. It was forged early.
Just out of curiosity, what were you doing when you were over at Harvard?
That, I was working in what's called psychiatric epidemiology. I was a research assistant. I don't want to make it sound grander than it was, but I was aiding in research that was looking at the same thing, cross-cultural incidence of psychiatric disorders. So if you think of epidemiology in a disease sense, we understand it. Psychiatric means the incidence of psychiatric disorders across the globe. And what you find is different cultures put pressure on people in different ways that we break down. There's about the same percentage of people that have mental distress, but it has different patternings. So...
And therefore treated in different ways or addressed
in
different ways.
Yeah, like Nigeria. Up until recently, the word depression did not exist in the language. They have a lot of spirit possession, whereas we don't necessarily have spirit possession, but we do have depression. And, of course, ways of treating it, much more indigenous approaches to that, and involving the family and involving the tribe, etc. So looking at that, that's what the Harvard study was on, looking at the Yoruba of Nigeria, the Canadians in a small town in Halifax, and just looking at various cultures and the influence upon them, and Vietnam during the war. How did the perception of things influence people's psychological health?
Well,
and one of the things you find, one of the things you find is perception, even if things are not true, have great weight on a psyche. So the perception in Vietnam, for instance, that some of these chemicals were creating two-headed children and, you know, things that were more mythological, but people believed them, and that caused tremendous distress for people. So that's what that study was on, actually validating all of that.
Right. Well, very so powerful, right, how our cultural milieu impacts how we perceive our states and how we are, how we deal with it. And obviously, you know, I'm sure when you were studying it, in Africa, they didn't really have antidepressants readily available, so they have their own cultural way.
Right, and they don't have, they didn't have the concept of depression. That's kind of my point. You know,
Yeah,
but they have spirit possession, which is we don't have that much of in this culture. But yes, a profound impact on how we perceive what's going on with inside of us and how we treat it, for sure. Which is one of the interesting... You go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe we have more spirit possessions than we think in this culture.
Yes, bingo, bingo.
Maybe we should start thinking that way.
Yeah, exactly. There are some funny stories about that. But, you know, it's very particularly interesting in this day and age, as you know full well, when we look at from the jungle of the Amazon basin, the plant medicines coming out into our cultures and how they're being adapted to our cultural milieu, it becomes even more interesting. And that how the indigenous people perceive things, how they administer the medicines, versus how it's being assimilated here. Big topic in the psychedelic research world.
So let's talk about how you got involved in this documentary, From Shock to Awe. And I just have to say, I was able to see this documentary in its entirety, and it just moved me to tears, Janine. It was so powerful. And at the same time, so uplifting and just so, you know, just really opened your heart because of what happened as a result of this experience that occurred for the vets who were the centerpiece of your documentary. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But let's just talk about how you got involved in helping to produce a documentary about vets who are dealing with PTSD and some of the some of the stats. Just we hear about this a lot. We know that it's a big problem, but I don't think most of us really have entered into the world of someone
right.
who has post-traumatic stress, which you really conveyed so well in the documentary. You took us into their reality, and it was pretty, shocking is one word that comes to mind to really experience what life is like and the consequences of post-traumatic stress. And, of course, I just have to say that post-traumatic stress is more widely experienced by people than we have ever thought, I think, before, until we started naming
Correct.
It and looking into it, right? Because anyone who has a trauma of any sort can be affected and have consequences, how they function,
Absolutely.
How their brain wires, yeah.
Right. And, yeah, just to put a fine point on it, we focus on veterans, but there's more trauma in our culture in civilians than there is in military people because trauma is pervasive. So just by the numbers, there's more people with PTSD who aren't veterans. But that our story centers around them, but it does apply, as you're suggesting, to many more people, to a much broader base. And as far as how I got... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I would imagine there are entire countries in the world where people must be suffering post-traumatic stress. I mean, even when I visited Israel a couple of years ago and the history of people who, whose parents or grandparents came to Israel and or many people themselves, I mean, that whole country seems to have trauma. It's, they're dealing with
exactly.
trauma. And it's huge. Any of these countries that have civil wars or there's genocide, I mean, the whole country is so traumatized.
Exactly. And just to your point, I was just talking to an Israeli, and she was saying, our whole country is traumatized. We were talking about the film and how impactful it was for her, and also telling her that it had shown in Israel to great popularity. It was in high demand when it was shown at a film festival, and then it just kept being shown again. And she was saying it's because of that. The whole country is living on edge, you could say. And then, of course, there's Syria and Rwanda. It goes on and on. But getting back to your question as to how I got involved, it traces its origin, again, back to spiritual roots. I would say my initial experience with LSD in 1970 that showed me the unity of all things has not only informed my career, but I feel I owe a great debt to having had that experience. So my friend Luc Côté, who is the filmmaker, he is the professional filmmaker. He's made over 40 films. Beautiful, accomplished, Canadian-based filmmaker. And I were friends meeting in an ashram in the mid-70s. So since that time, we stayed in touch, and he's always said we should make a movie together. I would always pitch him ideas. None of them would stick. Finally, I said, one of the times he was visiting, I said, how about we make a movie on the spiritual and therapeutic benefits of psychedelic medicines? And he said, now that maybe that's it. And it was not much longer after that we settled on doing it through the eyes of veterans, partly because he had already made a film about PTSD and veterans, and it was a hopeless movie. You left there going, what's to be done? It just felt like there was nothing that could be done. So this is a follow-up. Plus, it also happens that I grew up in a military family. So although my father did not have PTSD, I feel like the military environment and all that that implies is in my blood. And it's another way of counteracting some of that influence of the militarization of our country. So that's how its inception, and then it just kept growing and growing in terms of us going around the country, interviewing veterans. That takes quite a while, by the way, to gain the trust of veteran communities if you're not a veteran yourself. So that was at least a year-long process of meeting vets, gaining their trust, showing them that we were well-intended. And then it was another year before we actually found the two characters and their families that we followed. And what a journey it has been.
Wow. So what did you learn, before we get into the actual documentary and the whole experience and message of that documentary, what did you learn when you went around for a year meeting vets and learning about their lives and post-traumatic stress?
Well, to be honest, it was a heartbreaker, because being immersed in that world and seeing it firsthand, seeing the damage that is done to the spouses, the children. There were some homes we went into where you could see the fear in the eyes of the children because they had a parent who was prone to rage, prone to hypervigilance, prone to some violence. I mean, it made a deep impact on my heart. It is not an easy world to be immersed in at that level when you're really at the heart of the PTSD. You see the lack of sleep, you see the hypervigilance, you see the inability to relax and relate. So it took a personal toll somewhat. I kept saying to Luke, we've been in the shock part for so long. Can we get to the awe? Can we get to the awe? But it's a very real problem. We also met, of course, wonderful human beings. These are earnest, articulate, intelligent. I think most Americans have a skewed view of people in the military. Many of these people are more self-aware than the average American, I would say, because they have had to look at themselves and go through excruciating circumstances and confronted themselves, whether it be in battle or be it coming home. So it was eye-opening in many regards and quite a privilege that we took seriously.
So from your understanding, how would you define post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, there's many clinical definitions, and sidestepping that, I would say it's a bundle of symptoms, and it's different for each person. But because of trauma, which could be complex or simple, complex trauma meaning probably started in early age and then was compounded by battle in the case of the veterans. It's a bundle of symptoms that implies that the brain is actually stuck in a way of constantly being hypervigilant, having difficulty sleeping, often self-medicating in order to try to counteract those symptoms. Hair trigger. I mean, imagine living where you have to be aware that you might be killed at any minute for a year on end. That changes the brain. And it requires big medicine in order to reset it. And that's a lot of what actually the film is about. But it's quite a few symptoms that you see. And there's a lot of self-medication going on.
Would you say it is a brain damage or a wiring of the brain that occurs that's never like a wiring of a brain out of like a war zone environment that never resets back into a different, more safer, peaceful environment? I mean, is it more of a brain? It's a trauma to the brain.
Well, that's controversial. You know, people are still researching that. And there's often, if you're actually talking about the brain mechanics of the brain, there is indication that the hypothalamus and the amygdala, which is the long-term memory, is overactive in certain regions of the brain. That some of that has been established. There are often combined with traumatic brain injuries going on as well. So that's a confounding variable. But if I were putting it in terms that were easily relatable to, the way I describe it to people, it's as if the brain got in a kink because of assault day in and day out and having to go into certain patterns day in and day out, that it gets stuck there. And it takes very big medicine to unstick it. So that the brain keeps going over and over, seeing the same images over and over again. And to tell somebody to just relax that has that going on in their brain is like telling somebody blind to see. It just is not possible. So that's why big medicines, and by that I mean plant and psychedelic medicines, seem to be so effective, where talk therapy and normal pharmaceutical drugs are not, because it just doesn't touch that deep, deep wound in the brain. But there's also another component, which is a spiritual wounding. One of the characters in our movie talks about how his own therapist at the VA said, "You've tried everything. You've tried exposure therapy, EMDR, group therapy, talk therapy, all the pharmaceuticals." And he said, "What you've got is a spiritual injury, and you've got to find something spiritual to heal it." And that's where these medicines come in, because they're definitely of a spiritual nature. And Prozac can't touch it.
Right, and I mean that was a wise, that was a wise therapist, because
therapist, yes.
In your documentary, one of the vets talks about how many medications he had been prescribed, because that's it's one of the first line, right, of therapies to deal with. That's
pharmaceuticals, right?
Pharmaceutical. I mean, what did you find out? I mean, they're taking so many meds, and a lot of them are antidepressants. And I have certainly spent a lot of time investigating the consequences of antidepressants, which happens to be one of the causes of suicide. Because antidepressants for some people actually make them suicidal, which is, I'm sure, contributes to the high incidence of suicide that's going on right now
with
people with PTSD.
Yes,
this
is one of the stories we heard over and over again in talking to the vets with PTSD. I mean, if I heard it once, I heard it 100 times. They all have the same story. They go into the VA. They say, I'm sleepless, so they give them a sleeping pill. I'm anxious, they give them an anti-anxiety pill. Just each thing is just another prescription. So they have 5 minutes with the doctor. It's just writing more and more prescriptions until this buildup with, for instance, like Matt, who had over 90 prescriptions in the course of, I believe it was 3 years, taking about 21 pills a day, many of which, he says, almost killed him. And if it doesn't kill them, what we also heard is it makes them into zombies. You know, they're overweight. They're impotent. They can barely concentrate. They can't sleep. So it's a non-life. Now, I do want to add that there are many well-meaning doctors and workers at the VA. This is not an indictment against that. But all too often, this slew of pharmaceuticals is an easy way out, and it doesn't really work. As you said, antidepressants, which often have a very low rate of effectiveness anyway, and it can increase ideation and suicidality. It's not working. Let's just put it that way. Works for a percentage of people, but for many, many of our veterans and other people with PTSD, it doesn't provide a real answer. It's just treating symptoms.
And, I mean, I think it's even more than that, Janine. It's not that it doesn't work. I mean, it's causing harm on top of everything else that's going
exactly.
on. It's really, you know, you make, you know, I mean, there's so many, there's such a long list of side effects in addition to the ideation of suicide and homicide, but there's just so many side effects and addictions, and, you know, it just becomes a nightmare in itself when you're caught up in that system. As best as they're, you know, I get they're trying to do the best they can, but the paradigm doesn't work.
I couldn't agree more. And that is made abundantly clear in this film.
So tell us about the two main characters of your documentary, the two vets that you chose to be the focus of your story.
Right. Well, actually, there's three, because one of the couples, both,
that's right,
the husband and wife, are both combat vets. So that couple is Mike and Brooke Cooley. Their story is heartbreaking because both of them having PTSD, both of them trying to cope, they have three children. We meet them with their PTSD. So that is the progression of the film. We enter their lives while their PTSD is active. It's not, they're not describing it retrospectively. They are actually full-blown PTSD. So you see the havoc that it wreaks on the family and the sadness that comes from not being able to live, quote-unquote, a normal life. Hating, Mike describes how he hated himself for his behavior, but he couldn't stop it. And he sees the effect on his children. And there's one scene in the movie where he's crying and just saying, you know, I don't want them to live in a world of hate. And that's what they're learning. So, yeah, that's one couple. And the other couple is Matt and Aimee Kale. Matt also, multiple suicide attempts. Very difficult. All of our characters are extremely intelligent and articulate. He himself has a neuroscience background, so he understands the mechanisms of all the drugs, etc., but he could not pull himself out of it. Aimee, his wife, talks poignantly, and you meet her in her own pain, you know, because of his pain and her own pain and what they've gone through. They're just all extremely lovable human beings, and yet caught when we first meet them in this deep cycle of PTSD. Multiple,
your heart really goes out to them.
You
I mean, they do. They're just honest in sharing their experiences. So you really enter into their world and what it's like, you know, when they drive down the road, what it's like, what goes
right
on for them, which was I mean, that's so powerful to be able to really have a sense of what their daily experience is like in life.
Right.
You know,
and so limited.
Few people know.
Yeah, it's so limited. I mean, Mike couldn't go out of the house. Brooke could barely go out of the house, let alone have a job. You know, the isolation that occurs just gets worse and worse and worse. And, of course, there's shame associated with it as well. You know, it's like these are proud men and women. You know, there was a lot of idealism that drew them into the military in the first place. So, yes, it's heartbreaking, it's real, and it's pervasive. Then the question becomes, well, what can be done? I will tell you that many, many, I would say 90% of the veterans we encountered with PTSD were already using cannabis as a medication to help them deal with anxiety, with sleep. It powerfully affected them. They were able to let go of pharmaceuticals. But still they wanted more because that was a daily application, you know, needing much like a drug. You need to take it every day in order to manage those symptoms. And our characters were looking for something much deeper, something that would allow them to really transform and live their lives free of the need for medication of any sort. And that was the real pull for them.
And so you enlisted these two men. Did you enlist them before they went on their journey with plant medicine?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
So you didn't know what would happen, right? I mean, you took a chance.
Exactly. Exactly. And in fact, because making a documentary film, which is a subject unto itself, we're not writing the script. We're following what really happens. And in our case, low budget, we only followed these two couples. It wasn't like we had 10 and then we could cherry pick, you know, who did well or any of that. All our marbles were in that basket. So we didn't know. We followed them and filmed them in their PTSD. They were so gracious to let us into their homes, let us, you know, be part of their family for days at a time in order to capture footage. And then when they go to the ceremony, here we have them all on one weekend, not knowing, will it work? What will happen? We really didn't know. And what you see in the film is what happened. It's profound, quick change.
So what made you decide? Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about plant medicine and the specific plant medicine that mm-hmm. was used. So let's talk about that and why you decided to work with this plant medicine on this journey.
Great question. First of all, we didn't decide. We were following them. And the research, you know, there's quite a bit of research going on now with psychedelic medicine for various maladies. The one that has gotten furthest in the FDA process is MDMA, sometimes known as ecstasy. But MDMA is the medical grade. So we thought that our journey would take us more in that direction, when in fact, the veterans that we chose wanted to do ayahuasca, which is, as I referred to earlier, plant medicine from the Amazon basin. So it was to those ceremonies that we were led and that they chose. Later on, you will see that one of our characters chooses to do an MDMA session as well. Or I should say, singularly for her healing. But the major transformation that is shown is using ayahuasca.
So So do you want to share a little bit more about ayahuasca, which is a topic of great interest? Obviously, people who have been listening to me for a while know that I have actually been doing ceremonies with this plant medicine in Peru and in Costa Rica for the past, I guess, going on 5 years, and it's been so absolutely profound and life-changing as a way of healing. But why don't you share from your understanding and perspective and research, how do you talk about ayahuasca?
I talk about it as an indigenous medicine that has been used in the Amazon basin for at least 300 years. There's indication that it goes back thousands of years, but to actually validate that is another issue. It's considered a human right in those countries to use that medicine. It's used in very sacred contexts for spiritual transformation and for experiencing unity with the earth. So it has a long history. It's natural. Ayahuasca, as your listeners probably know, if they've heard you speak of it, is actually a combination. It's a tea that's made from two plants, the bicapi vine and a chacruna leaf in most cases. And it is a deeply inward journey that is unpredictable. It is considered to have its own spirit. It's often referred to as the grandmother or mother ayahuasca. People often experience it as a separate entity, not just as their own wisdom, but as a separate spirit that speaks to them and works with them. And one never knows where it's going to go. So it's natural and a little bit wild. I think, honestly, that that's partly why it appeals to our veterans, that they like that, you know, let's just see what comes up. It's that edge of the unknown that appeals to them, and trusting that it's good, of course.
You know, I think that I wish we had another way to language these medicines rather than psychedelics. You know, in our culture, there is such a negative connotation around these things. You know, our culture has condemned them. Some cases, they have been abused and misused. But when it comes to these plant medicines, be it the mushroom, you know, be it psilocybin, be it ayahuasca, be it mescaline, the cactus, also known as San Pedro, these are traditional sacred rites that have been used to allow humans to remember who they truly are and their connection to the greater universe. And that's something that our culture, you know, has, you know, we don't really have a tradition of that. And we do it through religion, you know, or whatever we try to do in our materialistic world here. But in these traditional cultures, be it, you know, Native American cultures, I mean, indigenous cultures around the world have always used plants to help them reconnect with their spiritual essence and the natural world. So
and
they
heal,
can live
yes.
a spiritual life, right?
Yes. And to heal also mental disorders for both the spiritual connection and the healing of physical disorders as well. Actually, 85% of world cultures have that, have forms of this integrated fully into their culture, and we do not. Just on your point, and by the way, I think that was beautifully stated, that perhaps the word, because psychedelic, the word psychedelic, which means mind manifesting, has been stigmatized, and that was an intentional movement. The word that is being used sometimes, which is perhaps more accurate, is entheogen, which is substances for discovering the God within you. And that gets a little closer to the spiritual aspects, I think.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. We need a new nomenclature, new words, new concepts, new cultural beliefs to integrate us. And that's beginning to happen.
Right. And I think it's so important so we can embrace these gifts that nature has given us to further us, to help all of us become better human beings rather than see them as drugs that create some crazy behavior, right?
Exactly. That they're from the earth for us. They are great gifts. And we've just gotten so pharmaceutically oriented. And mind you, most pharmaceuticals came from plants originally.
Right.
They just got distilled and, you know, chemicalized. We need a new understanding. Let's put it that way. And new cultural beliefs.
Yes, which is what we're in the process of doing.
Mm.
So, your guys, your two, well, the three, was the husband and wife who both had post-traumatic stress, and the other vet who was married, whose wife was traumatized because of his trauma. And entered into this experience of doing these ceremonies under the guidance of a trained shaman to experience the possibility of that this medicine, ayahuasca, which is done under supervision by trained people, could somehow provide that spiritual healing that the therapist suggested. So take it from there, Janine.
Well, I don't want to give away too much of the movie, but what we do is we see them during their journey, the actual journey, their integration, their discussion about what's gone on, what they saw, how it affected them. And it was over one weekend, so there were the possibility of four ceremonies. And what you see is remarkable. As Mike says, it's been so fast, but I feel like years and years and years of weight has been lifted off my shoulders. I see things differently now. And that was in 2 days, basically. But you get to see it up close and see the look in their eyes as they go through this. And then we follow them up to 15 months later in the film. So it's not just this weekend of the ceremony, but what it was like coming back, how it affected their wives, their families. And I could tell you, because I'm still in touch with them, that they continue to grow. They continue to be healthy. They continue to be alive and on fire with wanting to talk about these medicines. Not only have they become functional, but they've become extraordinary in their lives and beacons of hope and light for others. Hence, from shock to awe.
It's such a great name. It's you know, the play on those two words is so profound, really. You know, when I saw this documentary, which really did, as I said earlier in our conversation, and it moved me to tears, especially at the end when they kind of, you know, they just make amends because of how they have been, you know, and the healing that goes on. But it reminds me of the work of Joseph Campbell in The Hero's Journey. These two men were wounded. I mean, maybe they were wounded before they ever went into the military, because I don't know what their lives were like before, but certainly wounded as a result of going into war. And people don't know who Joseph Campbell is in the hero's journey. He's just such a well-known mythologist,
I guess. Right?
Right.
Exactly.
You know that he used myth to help us understand our journey through life, and the hero's journey is so profound. That was the most profound series. Was a PBS special. It was yonks ago, I don't know, 25 more years ago when that was put on PBS. I was spellbound when I watched that. I felt it was a spiritual experience. It just spoke to me in such a deep way because it was understanding the deeper evolution of our lives, and the hero's journey is that all the experiences that each of us goes through, and some of them are traumatic and painful and difficult, and we all have painful, traumatic, and difficult experiences, and the learning and growth that potentially can emerge from the experiences that take us to a more profound understanding of life and who we are. That's the hero's journey. And those two vets that were the central characters of your documentary, to me, went, you know, into the depths of hell. And through the journey that you helped to provide to them and entrust, I mean, I think this whole documentary had to have been made with such trust because you didn't quite know where it was going to wind up with, you know, the journeys that these two guys took. Was how they emerged to really be the hero, the spiritual warrior,
right.
Warriors. That there's a real journey of this hero's journey is to become the spiritual warrior.
I call them warriors of the heart now.
Yeah.
But it's the same spirit, just as you said. Yeah, it takes the same amount of strength and willingness to enter the darkness to find the light.
So we don't want to give too much away, but we can tell people there is a happy ending to this. So let's talk a little bit about how people can watch this. I absolutely think it's phenomenal. I hope you win just tons of awards for this documentary, Janine, because, you know, obviously you put all this love, your heart and soul into this, and it's such an inspirational story that really leads us from darkness into the light and from hopelessness to hope. And whether people learn more about plant medicine, which isn't really even the focus of this documentary, it's a vehicle, right? It's a vehicle. But there's just hope here that all of these conditions that we've perceived to be almost impossible to resolve, there are ways to do it, and so much of that path is to be found through nature, working with nature in whatever way you are guided to go, that nature holds a key for us that we become so disconnected from in our life.
Exactly. And that, as Matt often says, there are many kinds of medicine. Nature is medicine. Community is medicine. Meditation is medicine. You know, there's many forms of medicine that are natural, as you say. But yes, it is a journey of hope and transformation, not just for our vets, but for all of us. And you ask how it can be seen. It's on digital platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, and Vimeo. Also available through our website, DVDs. I want everybody to see it. I think it's a universal story that all of us would benefit by seeing and experiencing, not only for our own hearts, but also to understand what war evokes within us. Many people have described this ultimately as an anti-war movie without ever stating that, just because you see the damage and you see what's required to heal and come out. And, of course, nobody wants to enter that world again.
So people need to go to the website. That would be the first step. And the website is to iTunes.
Yeah, the iTunes. Website is from shocktoawe.com. That's one access point, or just directly to iTunes, or directly to Google Play, or directly to Amazon. It's a title that's listed there. And you can pay-per-view. It's not much. And we write to us. We'd love to hear from everybody as to how it affected them. And share it.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say. So it's from Shock to Awe is the name of the documentary. Many platforms to watch it. It's the type of experience that really must be shared. I encourage people to share it. It'll open so much conversation. It'll open possibilities for healing that people maybe did not know was even possible, and to support the healing of our communities. And I just think it's a very profound, moving experience to have with other people, to share with other people.
Yes.
I want to
add that it cuts across political boundaries because it's a human story. It's not, about any one party. It cuts across socioeconomic boundaries. It cuts across religious boundaries. So it's a unifying experience, and it does provoke, as you say, deep conversation.
Well, I just cannot recommend it enough. I just found this documentary to just touch me in a very deep place, and I would absolutely encourage everyone to take some time, go download it, give yourself an evening, and just open your hearts and your mind to this amazing experience of hope and transformation and healing that's possible. So I just want to thank you, Janine, for all the time and effort and energy that has gone in, not to mention money, has gone into creating such a moving and inspirational documentary. I know it was a labor of love, and it's just much appreciated that you made this happen.
Thank you so much. And thank you for allowing this broad platform to talk about it, not just in sound bites, but to really go into some depth, and for your work. We're all in the same army.
we are. You can't do sound bites with this topic. That's probably your biggest challenge to convey in sound bites.
Exactly.
And if people are interested, I've talked more about the medicine, but I do go back every year to the center in Costa Rica called Rhythmia, and I'm going back again February 9th for a week, and I take a group, and it's an opportunity to experience the medicine. It's it's an opportunity to get a deep discount to attend Rhythmia if you go with me. So if people want more information, they just have to contact me or go to rhythmia.com/Selman, because then they'll get the special deal that they have offered me and my group. So Janine Sacred, thank you so much for your work, your mission in life, and your dedication to your spiritual path. It's been such a pleasure and honor to have you on the show today.
Thank you. And likewise.
And
we're compadres,
all my listeners
on the path.
on the path, indeed. We're all on the path. And thank you to all my listeners who are on the path. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. I'd like to remind everyone the path of honoring life and nature and love. And until next time, see you there. Have a great week.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Thank you all.